Welcome to Food Matters Live. This is the podcast that showcases the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, I'm a TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Today is all about the gut. Over the last few years, there's been a growing interest in the benefits of a healthy gut microbiome balance. Today, we're bringing that knowledge together and asking how the food and nutrition industry is tapping into this research and, let's be frank, making money from it. And crucially, what's next in terms of research and understanding? Which of the gut's many avenues are most beneficial for our individual health and for developing a business? And is it all ethically sound, or should we be appalled by fuzzy marketing that implies that taking an eye-bleedingly expensive probiotic will solve your gut issues, supported by proxy review sites that make breathtakingly hideous pseudoscientific claims? Well, joining me to look at the opportunities and the threats are Maria Mascaré, analyst at the strategic market research organisation Euromonitor and a specialist in food and nutrition. Hello there, Maria.
Hello.
Brilliant to have you. We've also got John Walsh, CEO of Bio&Me, a food company making granola and muesli, described as the UK's first dedicated, evidence-based gut health food company. Hello, John.
Hi, Stefan.
And I believe you've eaten your own granola this morning. I'm very, very pleased to hear that.
I did.
We also have Rosemary Ferguson, who is a nutritionist and a functional medicine practitioner. Hello there, Rosemary.
Hi, Stefan.
Brilliant to have you as well. Okay, so first of all, we should ask, why has this area been growing so much recently? You know, probiotics and high fiber foods, they're really not brand new ideas. So why the vast expansion in the market now? Maria, it's kind of one for you, really, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. I think that one of the key reasons is traditionally, consumers have associated probiotics and fiber with very specific benefits, such as digestion, in some cases with immunity in the case of probiotics. But it is just in the last few years when consumer awareness has risen and they're starting to understand the broader benefits of having a healthy gut and how that can impact not only immunity and digestion, but also can have an impact on mental health, how you sleep, your skin health, your metabolism, or even hormonal health. So I think all of this is very important and how having a healthy gut could help prevent the development of inflammatory mediated conditions, heart disease, inflammatory bowel diseases, rheumatoid arthritis. So that is what is creating this increased interest into this space, in my opinion.
And I mean, it would be hard not to mention the COVID word. I mean, the paranoia and fear prompted by COVID has made us all look to ourselves a fair amount. And that, again, as you say, the concept of immunity is really important. Is COVID a big part of this, do you think, Maria?
I think so. And when we look into health in general, not only about gut health, but health in general, COVID has been a big catalyst of, you know, putting into the forefront. It was very important already for consumers, but it really kind of like put it there at the top of the priority. So definitely it is an important point to mention.
Okay. And so I mentioned that we've made lots of other additions about gut health. We've talked about physical health, the gut and COVID, gut and dementia, to name just a few. Scientific knowledge is increasing all the time. More and more research papers are being published. But I wondered, Rose, out of all the recent discoveries, what's got you most excited?
For me, and this again is nothing new either, but it's hermetic stress in the gut. And hermetic stress and hermesis is about applying, humans were born to have a little bit of friction in their lives, and nowadays we really don't. We live in central heated homes, we have food 24/7. And so I think the microbiome, our bacteria, thrives when it gets a little bit of stress, whether that's cold water therapy or intermittent fasting or doing a bit of exercise, and that then our microbiome thrives, and then in turn, you know, that helps our immune system, our mood, as you said, everything that's linked to the gut. So I think actually lifestyle things, rather than, you know, obviously what we put in our mouths every day is the key, but also lifestyle things is what are really, really exciting, also because they're accessible to people. And I'm a little bit fed up of a world where it's like a really high, you know, you have to be a high earner in order to be healthy. These are things you can do every day. And that, I think, is really important.
Okay, and John, what recent discoveries that have excited you?
Well, I should probably make a confession first of all, which is I'm not a scientist. That's my co-founder, Dr. Megan Rossi. I think she's been on your show before.
She has indeed, absolutely.
So I'll actually come at it much more from a sort of consumer point of view, because I spend my time talking to consumers. And I think one of the things that keeps striking me, which will be very different probably to your audience on this podcast, but is we've still got such a long way to go on the education side of things. So what's great is people listening to this will be talking about it to people and passing the word on. But for most consumers, it's still, you know, an emerging trend. So therefore, when it comes to the science, probably the one that's getting me the most excited at the moment is about, I mean, really basic, just the link between artificial ingredients and the gut. So, you know, we're all about whole grains and whole foods, etc. But it's astonishing how, whilst you would assume it, the science is now just coming out on, well, Megan is doing research at King's about it to prove the link between better gut health and whole grains versus the negative effects that artificial ingredients can have. And you would think that was already complete, but actually it's just coming through. So that really simple bit there, just about, you know, whole natural ingredients versus artificial, is one area that gets me excited. The other one that I think consumers are starting to tap into is around personalization and sort of very specific diets. So we just brought out a FODMAP-friendly version, which is, you know, really just a 12-week diet. And I think the more, you know, as you look forward 5 years, 10 years, that the ability of brands to personalize to individual consumers, that's another big area that's going to be very exciting.
So is personalization a big part of your strategy looking ahead?
Looking ahead, yes.
Yeah. And just to be clear, you know, we've covered the scientific research immensely with this. So I am also just interested in how people are making some dosh out of this. You know, there's no harm in tackling that. So that's why it's brilliant to have you here with us, John. So let's take on board that idea and look at consumer and retailer trends. So, Maria, which sectors of the market have been expanding the most and why are they?
Yes, there are a few areas that have expanded in the space, and I will be talking what we've seen on the shelf, right? So probably the most obvious is fermented foods. If you think about yogurt brands, we've seen quite a few of them having repositioned from just immunity or digestion towards gut health, and you have like major brands like Activia having done that in the UK. But then we've seen obviously a big boom of categories, fermented food categories that have a high content of live bacteria, and that's for example kefir. In the UK specifically, we've seen growth rates for this category being very, very high. And we could look from, you know, early entrants like Biotiful brand and then other major brands that follow suit. If you think about Yeobali, Müller, Onken, all of them now have kefir on the shelf. And thinking on fermented foods, we should not forget about kombucha, pickles even. But also, we've seen developments in grain-based foods, and you know that really links to John's brand, you know, with the breakfast cereals and granolas. It's still niche, I would say, but you know, some of these products that used to be positioned towards high fiber or whole grains, we're starting to see some claims towards gut-friendly, right?
Yeah.
So I would say the reason why these categories, I would say because the live bacteria, in the case of the fermented foods or the high fiber content in some of these grain-based foods are naturally available in there. So it does make sense to try to position them towards this gut health angle. And even brands that have rebranded from that digestion immunity to gut health didn't even have to reformulate, right? So it was just a very easy win on that front. That's, I would say, the why, right? And that's fine.
And I've just come back from France, and I was looking in a huge Carrefour, and there were two enormous aisles of yogurts, and I would say about a third of it was branded. I think I can't remember what the French word for it was, but basically lactobacillus. And I wondered, can you give us a bit of international context in terms of the UK market, or is this expansion happening across the board, certainly in Europe?
I would say that there are various degrees of development. Definitely the UK is ahead of the curve. If we compare it to other countries, the US, Australia, obviously other Western European countries are following suit. You think France, Spain. But as we've mentioned, this concept is still quite niche for consumers. So it is now with this consumer awareness is starting to kind of like increase. So I would say those kind of like lead. But obviously, if you think about functional foods, broadly speaking, and probiotics as part of it, we have markets like Japan, China, these in Asia, this has been a trend for very many years, but the concept...
They've been eating kimchi for thousands of years, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But the concept is a little bit different. I think they associate it with a specific sort of like immunity and digestions and things like that. Not necessarily the concept of gut health about, you know, these broader benefits that we are starting to learn more about through science and so forth. So there are different stages, but definitely a lot of potential to develop further.
Yeah. And also, I wondered, is there a demographic trend, Maria? Who is buying these products? Can we build a bit of a profile for them?
I would say that younger consumers are obviously on top of these trends, not only like gut health, but plant-based in general. They are like wanting to know more natural, more clean. But I would say it would expand across the board, right? Because then you have the aging consumer, which, you know, have like higher incomes and they're also very worried about their health and all of these. You know, it's starting to kind of like also spur that attention from that generation. So yeah, I would say that probably the younger generation are on top of the, you know, new trends and so forth, in which gut health plays a role. But there are interests coming from every generation when we analyze our service in terms of digestion, immunity, that's really across the board.
Okay, so Rose, outside of the supplement market, I mean, there are loads of foods that are already rich in probiotics. You've got fermented food, kimchi, sauerkraut, all sorts of different things. Plus, you've got, you know, a greater understanding of whole foods and how beneficial they are. But those fermented foods don't really feature particularly widely in the UK diet. I wonder, is that changing? Do you perceive that there's a shift in dietary attitudes towards fermented food?
I mean, I definitely think that there is. And actually, if you think about COVID and the sourdough explosion, now, sourdough is fermented when it's the dough. So that's why it's helpful for gluten digestion. So people who are gluten intolerant sometimes can tolerate sourdough because the bacteria, whilst it's been proving, has done its work and broken down the gluten for you. But when you cook it, then it's not fermented anymore because you've killed all those little bacteria. But I would say that's definitely a shift towards fermenting food and doing ferments at home. So I think that's what I would say when Maria talks about the younger generation. My daughter's at university, they're really into like fermenting stuff and they have jars and SCOBYs and they're making kombucha. And so they're really getting hands on with it. Mm. And I would say that's a younger generation thing. I think the older generation, perhaps not so much. I'm still surprised because I have a lot of my friends don't drink alcohol anymore. They used to drink a lot, not anymore.
Self-pickled. Yeah.
Exactly. They've been pickling for a long time. But you can't get kombucha at the pub or at a restaurant, you know. And I think that's always surprising to me because I feel like, obviously in my world, it's very talked about a lot, but that always reminds me that it's not as mainstream as I might think that it is. But I think the fermenting that's going on at home is the interesting thing, that people are really getting into that. And, it, you know, and you see it on TikTok and people talking about SCOBYs. And I think that's really nice. I mean, for me, getting in touch with where your food comes from is really important. So, and I think it will grow in the supermarket. I think you will see it because people are talking about their gut so much and understanding that it's not just from a probiotic. What you feed your microbiome is more important on a daily basis.
Mm. Oh, sorry, go on, John.
One little anecdote, if I could. So we actually launched Live and Active yogurts last year as well as our granolas. And we did, part of it, I think, going back to kind of consumers and the mainstream, Rose, is I think some of the terminology gets in the way. So for us, that word kefir, which on the one hand is such a positive, but actually to most consumers, you know, the phrase we always got back was, it's a little bit scary. They didn't know what it was. What is this sort of, you know, the low alcohol percentage, etc. So we chose not to call ours a kefir, but rather call it a live and active yogurt to try and broaden the appeal to the mainstream. Because, yeah, it is just this funny how consumers adopt new trends. If you want to get as many people in, the old keep it as simple as possible, I think.
Yeah. I mean, because cheese is fermented, you know, people talk about, you know, lots of people eat hard cheese all the time or any cheese and, you know, and they don't, it's not in the ferments section.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And John, I'm interested in whether or not there's a male-female split in who you are targeting. Obviously anyone that buys your product is welcome, but do you target any particular sectors? Is it male, female? Do you have a demographic sort of profile?
Targeting wise, no, we target everybody who we can, everybody who's interested in gut health or their overall health. However, when you look at our user base, it probably won't surprise you to know we are strongly skewed female. And part of that, I think, without wanting to tick my half of the gender off, is, you know, I think women are just more interested in health. They are earlier adopters, etc. So therefore, I think we skew on the female side.
And another question for you, John. I mean, other than your company, and we're going to talk about your EFSA good for your gut health claim in a bit. But can you identify other companies and brands that have been doing interesting work and exploiting this space successfully?
When you really think about it, probably some of the companies who've done the best work here are the retailers, because of course you've got to have the brands as the innovators coming through, but you need the retailers' support as well. So if I was to compliment, you know, I guess sort of one of our competitors, you know, Biotiful and Sainsbury's, as I understand it, the history, they built that kefir category together, and it takes both the brand and the retailer to really help and have the foresight, etc. That is kind of a way of me saying, you know, thank you to the retailers who supported us as well. But it's just true, you need both on. And I think Sainsbury's have been very strong. Waitrose have sort of followed us on gut health. Tesco are now getting into it. So, and the more, again, going back to the mainstream argument, the more they can do it, the better. Then I think I'd give credit, this might sort of surprise you, but to the sort of the category lead. So when someone like Danone and Activia comes out and starts talking about gut health, you know, when I go back to education, you know, their reach is obviously far more than ours. So the more education, the more noise they can make about it, the better for consumers, and frankly, the better for us, because, you know, we can go in and bluntly be better than them for your gut health, but they've got the marketing monies to make the noise.
Yeah,
it's true of Kellogg's as well. If you look on the back of their packs, you know, they do a lot about gut health education there. So I would commend them. And then of course there's lots of other startups like ourselves who, you know, out there, they're fighting for it. But funnily enough, I'd probably, you know, say to the big companies, you know, well done for driving the education on it.
Mm. So Maria, I mean, with the bigger companies diving in there and hopefully blazing a bit of a trail and helping the entire market, are there still gaps? Where are the gaps? Are there easy opportunities out there for companies to take on board?
I do think there's gaps. There's a lot of room to grow, category-wise, obviously. Just within the categories, what we are seeing gut health positioning, there is a lot more to develop. But into all the categories where probably it is not so present, this type of positioning, I could think about when we look into our data at Euromonitor, we look, where are the fastest growing categories, right? And you see there things like meal kits, for example, your dinner mixes and things like that. Consumers are looking for convenient meal solutions. Is there opportunities there for including these kind of like gut-friendly meals? I'm sure there are. So that could be one. Also in the whole plant-based universe, if you think about it, like when we have like these alternatives to dairy and alternatives to meat substitutes, these products are really heavily processed and all the rest of it. But, you know, at the end of the day, we have vegetables that we combine and we promote that sort of like plant-based diets that are gut friendly. There is definitely an opportunity on that, and not necessarily so connected with that point, but for example, we just saw Biotiful launching a plant-based kefir, this kind of like gut friendly positioning and so forth. So the whole plant-based world is one of the fastest growing categories in the industry, and a lot could be done to try to kind of like bring the right ingredients together with a clean label positioning to promote the gut friendly positioning. So I would say those two areas are definitely two that come to mind that are fast growth and where there is a lot of opportunity to develop into the gut health space.
Yeah. And John, how difficult is it to build a business? You know, for people starting off in this area, you've got firsthand experience of this. What's the journey been like? And have there been any particular surprises along the way?
so For anybody, so I worked in the food industry for 25 years before launching Bio & Me, at big companies, Procter & Gamble, Nestle, etc. I'm afraid my usual drink, I was actually worked on the launch of Sunny Delight, for anybody who's old enough to remember that. And
Blimey.
Yeah. Yes. So I sort of say Bio & Me is my way of saying sorry about that.
Atonement,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So I've got, you know, I've got grey hair and a lot of experience in the food industry. And I think, you know, I started by when I was 48. And my God, it's hard work. I mean, I've never worked harder in my life. And I won't go into all the boring bits, but it is just very, very hard work. So I would say to anybody...
But is that because starting a business is bloody tough? Or is it this particular space that you're in?
I think just starting any business is bloody tough. And honestly, very happy if anybody wants to give me a call. I'm very happy to have a chat with them about it. Then when it comes to here, to the gut health particularly, I suppose this is our great strength and what helped us through. And I would have hated to have done a launch, well, I wouldn't have done a launch without it, is we actually had a USP of something unique about us. And I apologize if I slightly go into sell mode now, but you know, the point about crediting all the big companies, etc., before is, you know, we are uniquely better than them. And I've worked for big companies myself, and you know, they dominate the mainstream. I've never been able to go out and proudly say we are the best for gut health, whether it's on our cereals, because we've got 15 or 16 different plant-based foods in there, or in our yogurts, we've got 10 times the level of cultures versus anybody else. You know, we're just better, but we're better because we've got that USP. You know, nobody else can be created by the gut health doctor. And I think if you're going to start your own business, for heaven's sake, have that USP. I do look at some startups and it's like, oh, golly, you know, if there's nothing about you that's different, you know, being whatever, another water brand, like, yeah. It is very, very hard work. But gut health is a big trend. And if you can find a USP in there, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think the other big challenge, though, for this is true for all health brands, but it's true for gut health, is there's still, if I say damn it, but there's still this perception that if you're really healthy, you don't taste good. And we've worked, you know, so hard to make sure we're tasty. And I love all the feedback we get about being good for your gut. But actually, it's when consumers just write and tell us the joy of eating, whether it's our granolas or, you know, yogurts are especially, they're a little bit indulgent. They're a pleasure. And when people just say, oh, I've really enjoyed eating your yogurt, you know, food is a pleasure. You know, Stefan, you said you're a foodie, you know, like I'm a foodie. It's, you know, we don't want to make this hard work. People will only stay loyal to you if you taste nice. So you've got to get that balance right, I think, between being the best for gut health, but also, yeah, just tasting nice. So there you go, speech over.
Very good. No, I liked a lot of that. So Rose, sort of moving on from what do you think that consumers and retailers and people that you speak to in your work are going to want more of? You know, is there a particular area that you think isn't supplied well enough?
Well, actually, so one thing I just wanted to come back with what John said, actually, is I think I'm sick of hearing that people talking about healthy eating as if it's a diet. Eating a well-balanced, you know, like good food tastes great. And so I'm a little bit tired of that. So I would hope that we will move into a space where not putting junk food in your mouth doesn't mean you're on a diet, you know, because that's sort of where we're at the moment. If you're eating a bit of kale, because kale is the, you know, the head veg for this, is you're considered that you're on a diet, which is irksome. And I'd like that to change. And I suppose also talking about what information people get when they're buying supplements, I think that's really key. I think it's a minefield out there. It's unregulated. And I know that's a mission that would be a massive task. But I do feel like the consumers deserve it. They spend a fortune. I see people in my clinic who have spent a fortune on supplements. They don't really know why. They don't know if they're any good. You know, and I feel for people because it's a very difficult place to navigate the supplement market. And I'd like people to start to, but then going back to food, I'd like people to understand that food is the best way to maintain. It's consistent. You do it all day, every day. And I think that people understanding and having more education around food and also food labelling, you know, when we talk about yogurts, it sort of makes me twitch because there's an awful lot of yogurts out there, as John will know, that are full of sugar, that say they're good for you, that, you know, and that's a really basic one that's been kicking around for years. But, you know, there hasn't really been much movement to help the consumer navigate, and that would be a good thing too.
The problem I think I see is that there are these enormous kind of proxy health claims that are made and fake review sites. So I spent a couple of hours preparing for this podcast, and I was just it was breathtaking, the shocking fake review sites that that claim to sort of be applying clinical reviews to products and then promoting them. And I mean, horrific. I was blown away by the and their proxy claims. It's just shocking. So John, tell us a little bit more about the EFSA Good for Your Gut health claim, because and what that means and what the whole area sort of implies.
So it won't surprise you. So all our products are designed by my co-founder, Dr. Megan Rossi. So we, if you like, naturally stick to the rules because we, you know, we want to, and it's the right way to do it. But also, you know, Megan is putting her credibility on the line as well as our brand. So therefore, you know, for every claim, there are rules that you have to follow, and we follow them. And therefore, that's how we can, on our granolas and porridges, et cetera, uniquely say good for your gut. And that's the EFSA approved health claim. I think what is hard for us and what drives us mad is when we see people, I'm not familiar with the sites you're talking about, but there are, I think, some brands who inadvertently say things that they just didn't realize was actually a health claim. And I think there are some who not quite bend the rules, but, you know, find their way around the rules, circumnavigate the rules. And I know there are famous court cases from the past that sort of dealt with probiotics, etc. And I would just appeal to all brands to make sure you're doing it the right way, because otherwise consumer trust will be dented. You know, we hear stories back from sort of the 90s where I think, you know, health claims were, you know, sort of almost like a plague on all your houses. So, you know, we will always hold ourselves to the highest that we have to. It's like, it's what we stand for, by the way. You know, and again, you know, going back to that bit about having a USP, you know, all the other big companies do lots of things, including gut health. It's a bit of an add-on benefit for them. All that we do is gut health. Therefore, you know, we can't afford to take a risk on that. And I would just encourage other brands, do it the right way, or else, you know, you'll hurt yourselves in the long run.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now, I mean, this is, gut health is part of a huge area of medicine. And I wonder whether or not you just think that there should be a greater public health push for gut health. I mean, if it, you know, it's your gut microbiome seems to feature in so much of mental and physical health, but it hasn't really been explicit in government messaging. Now, Maria, do you see that is changing? And if so, will that have an effect on the market?
I definitely think that it needs to be put into the public health, and that kind of like connects with what Rose and John just mentioned. Like, consumers need education, and for that we need governments to push for this to be clear, claims that are easily to understand, because we do see in the surveys that we run with consumers, they go with whatever they see front of pack, right? And that's not necessarily that product is healthy, or that product to Rose put maybe has a lot of sugar. It has a huge number of ingredients, having these very processed type of products on the shelf. So I do think there is a need to change these. There is a need for being more regulated, governments being more involved on these, and creating that education also from the public health side of things, not only from the big corporates or the retailers, because obviously we know from that side they want to sell their products, right? So we go in on the back of these products and seeing like all these stories about gut health, which, you know, obviously is good to raise awareness, but it doesn't mean that product probably is the best for you, right? So yeah, definitely a lot more to be done on the public health side of things.
Mm. And John, do you think that would change the nature of the market for you if there was a bigger push from public health about gut health?
Yeah, it's not my area of expertise, but absolutely. I mean, anything that helps on gut health education is a good idea. The one I do know a little bit about is HFSS coming in, high fat, sugar and salt. And, you know, maybe a slightly different view to most, but I would say that's already worked, because the point of bringing in that regulation was to get brands and maybe the big companies to reformulate. And they've already done it, you know, and that's why for many of the big companies, it won't impact them as much as people thought, because they've had the time to reformulate. It's been going on for whatever, 10 years. So I think things like that are brilliant, because they are lowering, they will lower the amount of sugar, etc. You know, and Rose talking about added sugar, etc. So if there was a gut health equivalent of that, I'm afraid I don't have an idea for you, but you know, I think we'll look back and see HFSS as a big success, and a gut health equivalent would be terrific.
Yeah, well, we'll be tracking that and finding out. As long as there is some decent evidence based research on it, then we'll be talking about that as it unfolds. Okay, last questions then, really. So Rose, there's a lot left to learn about the gut. What would make you most excited to learn about? Which areas do you think could have a big impact on the people that you work with?
Well, I think, as I said earlier, I think hematic stress is really interesting. I think there's a lot to be learned around intermittent fasting. You know, everyone's intermittent fasting. The studies are iffy. You know, some are really good, some are really bad. So I'd like to look at the way we eat. And also fiber. I mean, I think fiber is somewhat an area. Fiber and prebiotic foods are the two words I'd like to talk more about. Prebiotic foods are things like leeks, onions, garlic, and they sort of cultivate the soil that our bacterial colony grows from. So I'd like more conversation about that and more conversation around fibre. And actually, talking about high sugar, high fat, it would be great if we had someone telling us how much fibre was in each what we eat, because that is really, really key to our gut health.
Okay. And John, what's on the horizon that gets you excited? Is there a piece of research? Is it a sort of a trend or a drift in the market?
Well, I'm with Rose on prebiotics. You won't be surprised. So, no, full stop. I mean, I think unfortunately I'm probably going to go back to the start as well. I think the personalization trend is a really big one. I get very excited about both from a taste point of view. So people being able to sort of, as it were, you know, design their own cereals, etc., but also from a health-based point of view. So as more and more research studies come out on gut health, we will be able to design particular products to particular dietary requirements, which I, again, you know, just from a doing the right thing point of view gets me very excited.
Yeah, excellent. And lastly, Maria, what's on the horizon for you? What are you most excited about in this sector?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna second on the personalized nutrition point, just because the understanding of gut microbiome playing a very important role in personalized nutrition is just tremendous, the opportunity that we have here. And I would say this because we also at Euromonitor, we ran a global survey recently earlier this year, and this included like over 20,000 respondents globally. And over 45% of the respondents were saying that they feel very comfortable or extremely comfortable seeking for, you know, using health tech related solutions to provide recommendations on personalized nutrition. And I think that understanding the gut microbiome to provide these recommendations would be a great area of opportunity to develop further. Mm.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, I know that we're going to be coming back to this subject again and again, so I hope that you will all come and join us to talk more on the subject. So Maria Mascarake, John Walsh and Rosemary Ferguson, thank you so much for joining me. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, there are plenty more at foodmatterslive.com. For example, if you go to the site and search A New Frontier, you'll find the episode where we look at how tech is changing grocery retail. Follow to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And thank you so much for listening.